On Tech News Today, Google and Amazon report financials. Who's up and who's down? We'll let you know. Plus, Microsoft wants to get into the Android business, and Facebook wants to get into Yelp's business. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, January 30th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 46 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off image subscription packages on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TNT115. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news of the journalists who report it, spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of tech, the thrill of victory, and the agony of, well, you know the rest. My name is Mike Elgin, and joining us is Conacher's Mashable Senior Tech Analyst, Christina Warren, who's on the phone today. How are you doing, Christina?
I'm good. I'm here audio only, but happy to be here as always.
Well, I'm happy that you're here, even if it's just audio. We'll take whatever we can get. We mostly just want your voice and your brain, and we've got all that, so let's get started. Amazon reported their financials yesterday. The company beat estimates with revenue of $29.3 billion and profits of $214 million. Allison Griswold is a reporter for Slate and joins us now to talk about Amazon's earnings. Hey, Allison, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Now, investors were worried about Amazon after the previous earnings call. Are they happy now?
They are very happy. Amazon stock is up like 14% right now. So I'd say Wall Street is pretty pleased with what they got yesterday.
So how big of a deal is it for them to even be reporting a profit? Because, you know, Bezos has consistently kind of said that he doesn't really care so much about them being profitable. And they even lost money for the fiscal year. But how important do you think it was for them to report a profit this quarter coming off of what was such a disastrous third quarter?
I think it was pretty important. Like you said, Amazon has sort of made this model for itself of we invest our money wisely and we'll make the profits when they come. And for a long time, Wall Street put up with that. But like you said, their last quarter was really not good. And their stock fell a lot. They took a hard hit after they reported. So the fact that they not only made a profit this quarter, but nearly tripled the earnings expectations was a pretty big deal.
Now, of course, they had a good quarter, but they didn't have a good year. They lost $241 million for the year. Was that an accident? I assume they're trying to at least break even. I know they like thin margins, but did they kind of blow it and accidentally lose $250 million?
I mean, that's a good question. I think the more important thing to look at for their overall year performance was their Amazon Prime numbers. So if you looked at their report, they signed up or they increased their membership 53% worldwide and 50% in the US in the last year, which was a big deal because Amazon increased the price of Prime sometime early last year. They rose it from $79 to $99. And so a lot of people were thinking, you know, is this too much? Are people going to still sign up for Amazon Prime now that they've had this $20 price increase? And based on the year total numbers, it bore out that people are still signing up. And that's the core of Amazon's business in a lot of ways. So that's important for them.
So Amazon doesn't reveal how many Prime members they have, but estimates are what, about 40 million? Is that what most analysts think that they're at?
Yeah, those are the estimates that I've seen.
And I think that it has to be said that I think everybody was nervous, and probably Amazon was as well, when they raised the price of Amazon Prime. And I think the consensus now is they got away with it and it was a good thing to do. They're making a lot more money. They've added a lot of benefits to Amazon Prime. And so that part of their business seems like a success story. I'd still like to know how many members they have, but they're not big on giving out information they don't have to give out. Allison Griswold is at Slate.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Allison Griswold. Thanks for joining us, Allison.
Thank you.
Reuters' Deepa Sitaraman says yesterday's earnings call demonstrates that Amazon is starting to warm up to Wall Street. Deepa joins us now to talk about her story. How are you doing, Deepa?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Now, how is Amazon's approach to investors different now?
Well, they started to reveal a lot more information. Allison pointed out that we saw the Prime numbers for the first time, not the actual number of members, but the percentage growth rate, which isn't perfect, which isn't what investors necessarily want, but it's something. The most significant move was the decision to spin out and report AWS separately, which is something that analysts have wanted for quite some time, and they're finally getting in the first quarter.
So why didn't Amazon ever break out the AWS numbers before? It seems like that would have been something, obviously, Wall Street wanted, but also seems like it would have been something good for them to point out, especially since they're such a leader in that space. Why do you think they didn't bother to break those numbers out in the past?
Yeah, Amazon doesn't say, so it's we can only kind of speculate on this, but there's some sense that, you know, Amazon doesn't want to give away its secret sauce. They're a secretive company. It's sort of in the backbone of the sort of corporate culture there. They don't even say how many employees work in the headquarters. So I think they, you know, the growth rate of AWS has been pretty astonishing over the last 5 years. And so that, you know, this has not been a strong spot for the company for this entire time. And it suddenly is now. And I think there's, you know, a little bit of a sense of pride and maybe they, you know, and maybe now, given what's happened over the last year with the stock and given kind of investors' discontent, they feel pressured to actually spin it out.
There's a certain class of company in the technology industry that likes to invest in all kinds of moonshots and crazy what-if kind of projects. These tend to be expensive, and they tend to not have returns in the near term, and most of them never really have significant returns. Amazon knows that its investors are concerned about its version of those types of projects, and they said that they will try to extract more revenue from assets in the future. But really, was that just lip service? I mean, they're still going to shoot for pretty thin margins, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a sudden turn of events. I don't think that, you know, the company has magically transformed. What you're seeing is a little bit of a yield, a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of Amazon throwing investors a bone. So I wouldn't necessarily call it some dramatic shift towards openness, but they're starting to, you know, let the light in a little bit.
Deepa Sitaraman is at Reuters.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at D Sitaraman. Thank you so much for joining us, Deepa. Google also reported quarterly earnings yesterday. The company made just over $18 billion for Q4 of last year and profits of about $4.76 billion. Alexei Oreskovic is a reporter for Reuters and joins us now. How are you doing, Alexei?
Doing great, thanks.
Now, how is Google doing? Are investors as happy with Google as they are with Amazon?
I think investors are still trying to make up their mind with Google, and this was a really weird quarter. I mean, the stock has been kind of a laggard for the past year, and then Q4 really kind of threw everybody for a bit of a whirl. When the numbers first came out, on paper, it looked like Google missed pretty much everything, the Wall Street's revenue targets and earnings targets. And, you know, technically they did. But as people started to look at the numbers closer, they realized it was a really kind of noisy quarter with a lot of stuff going on, like a lot of tech companies and companies in general. The strong dollar really had an impact. So that kind of took a toll on things. And there were a lot of other one-time items, real estate costs and the like. And so after people kind of digested it a little more, investors started to feel like, hey, maybe this wasn't that bad of a quarter. And you can see that now the stock is up 4% today after being down 2% initially yesterday.
So what's going on with the whole cost per click thing? Because, I mean, this has been declining and it's had kind of a, you know, rockiness over the last few quarters. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the cost per click has been kind of the big story and concern for Google for a couple of years now. It's basically a function of the consumer shift to mobile devices, smartphones and whatnot to access the service. And ads on smartphones that Google provides just don't make as much money as the ads that they've traditionally served up on desktop PCs. And so we've seen the cost per click really decline for a couple of years now. It's been in a multi-year decline, and investors are have been waiting for, you know, some signs that things are turning around. And Q4 kind of didn't really answer the question that much. Cost per clicks overall were down 3% year over year in the fourth quarter. And that was worse than people were expecting, maybe it to be break even. But then again, another one of these kind of interesting things in the fourth quarter where, you know, one of these butts, I guess people then looked at, you know, instead of looking at the aggregate cost per click, just the cost per click on Google's own sites, not network partner sites. And those ones did a little better this quarter. So I think the jury is still out, really, on, you know, kind of what's going on there.
Alexei Oreskovic is at Reuters.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at LEXNFX. Thank you for joining us, Alexei.
Thank you.
Microsoft is investing in Cyanogen, according to a report in The Wall Street Journal. Cyanogen Mod, of course, is an open-source operating system based on Android. Here to help us make sense of this unexpected turn of events is Engadget senior editor Devendra Hardawar. How you doing, Devendra?
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. Now, why is Microsoft investing in Android?
I mean, I feel like there are probably plenty of reasons for this. We don't know if it's actually happening yet. It's just a report. But investing in Cyanogen makes sense for Microsoft because it kind of helps promote the open Android ecosystem, which is sort of a branch off from what Google's doing with all of its own services. Cyanogen, I believe, doesn't have Google services built in, which that's kind of interesting. It gives Microsoft another playing field in mobile if Windows Phone, you know, doesn't quite take off as much as it should.
So is this basically, do we see this as them kind of hedging their bets? Because, I mean, we're kind of getting a muddled view from Microsoft here, right? Like, on the one hand, Nokia was doing the Nokia X project and doing kind of their own Android thing, and then they killed that as soon as that happened. And now Microsoft's investing in Cyanogen, which, again, kind of goes back to that similar view. So do we think they're just hedging their bets? I mean, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my head around this. What do you think?
It does seem like a hedge betting maneuver, right? And it's important that you bring up Microsoft killing Nokia's X phones. Those were like phones running Android that were also tied into Microsoft services. I do think like a part of the rumor is that Microsoft and Cyanogen are working on a custom image that'll have Microsoft services built in. So it could be sort of the same thing, except Microsoft doesn't have to do the development work for it. They could just kind of latch on to everything Cyanogen is doing. So, you know, kind of the best of both worlds for them. Microsoft doesn't have to spend too much time working on Android, but they may still be able to benefit from it.
The fact that it didn't want to invest in Cyanogen suggests that they could have just bought the company. Of course, Google wanted to buy the company too, but Cyanogen turned Google down. Do you know why they did that?
I mean, I've talked to Cyanogen CEO a couple of times back when, you know, I think it was last year or very recently that they kind of just became a full company. And he sort of talked about Cyanogen as becoming a third place player in mobile. So that's after Android and after iOS would be an offshoot, you know, of Android as the next player. And I think they're still moving towards that. And probably by getting more funding and by just continuing to grow as it is, it'll be worth a lot more than whatever Google was willing to pay for it. So they're aiming for like the $1 billion figure. Who knows what Google was offering them at that point.
Devendra Hardawar is at Engadget.com. This is one dot. Engadget.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Devendra. Thanks for joining us, Devendra.
Thanks, guys.
Facebook updated its iOS app yesterday. The new version has a new tool called Place Tips, which shows you pictures and posts your friends have shared from whatever location you happen to be at. Well, that's at least if you happen to be using an iPhone and you happen to be in New York City, like Christina Warren. In some cases, the app will learn about its location using Bluetooth beacons. Ian Thompson is a reporter for The Register and joins us to talk about this. How are you doing, Ian?
Pretty good. And yourself?
Very well, thanks. Now, the new feature shows information from businesses such as restaurants, that sort of thing. What kind of information does it show?
Basically, it'll put out, if you're using one of the hardware beacons, it'll put out a card about your particular establishment, the hours that you do, what kind of stuff you sell. It'll also link into the Facebook posts of that particular business or site, and also any reviews that your friends and people on your friends' network have posted about that, about the location itself.
Now, is Facebook going to be sharing your location on Facebook similar to the way that Foursquare does?
No, it isn't. And they're very keen to stress this in that really the only person who has the location, there's a slight minute blip to their servers, but the only person who knows your location is you, and it won't go up on your newsfeed. So if you are trying to dodge someone or taking an illegal sickie from work, then you're not going to be dobbed in by this one.
Okay, so what's the story with these beacons? Do these have to be dedicated special Facebook beacons, or will they use other platforms like Apple's iBeacon or some other sort of platform?
At the moment, Facebook is just saying it's using its own platform, and it's spamming out a number of these sort of hardware beacons to early test partners in New York at no charge. They haven't said at this point if they're going to charge businesses for using them in the future, but it looks like a very basic bit of kit. So, I mean, $10 worth of hardware maybe. And it just means basically that Facebook is using GPS, Wi-Fi and cellular tower data to triangulate your position. But in somewhere like New York, that's quite tricky because there's a lot of businesses in a very small area. So the idea behind the beacons is you know exactly who you're dealing with at any one time.
So, I mean, basically, am I going to be walking by every restaurant, every business in New York City and get a notification from my Facebook app that says, oh, welcome to wherever you just arrived, like when I walk by the Verizon store? Is that going to become a thing now?
If you've got the system turned on, I get a feeling there's going to be an awful lot of these little cards showing up at the top of the newsfeed. If you've got location turned off on your iPhone, then you won't be troubled by this. And you can turn off this particular service as well. But when you install, when the software update gets put on your machine, and if you've got location awareness enabled on your phone, it will automatically opt you into the system. You've got to physically go in and opt out.
Do you have any information, or barring that, do you have a wild guess as to when this will span beyond New York City?
I think, to be honest, it depends very much on how people use it. Facebook are obviously very keen to get into the location thing because it augments their advertising, their ability to sell advertising. But I think this is very much a toe in the water. They're only doing it in New York City, and I haven't heard of any plans to push it out beyond that. It really depends on how people use it. If the bulk of people turn it off and just try and ignore it or use it for a little while and then turn it off, I get the feeling this could be quietly dropped. But if it does prove popular, then it gives them a very good way to go up against Yelp or Foursquare and take some of the advertising revenue that's currently going to those companies.
I just hope nobody follows their example. And, you know, I'd hate for every social network to come out with its own beacon. Every small business will have, like, you know, 20 beacons, like, glued to the wall or whatever. Ian Thompson is at theregister.co.uk, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Thompson. And Ian, by the way, is spelled I-A-I-N. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Well, coming up later in the show, a famous rapper wants to compete against Apple. But first, let's talk about Shutterstock. You know, I'm always talking about Shutterstock and how great their photos are. It's easy to say that Shutterstock has fantastic photos, but if you're using if you're watching the video version of the show, I'm going to show you some. Shutterstock this week published a blog post that illustrates the top food trends for 2015, the upcoming food trends, with pictures of those foods. Now, if you're not watching, if you're listening, you can go to shutterstock.com/blog and see these same pictures. But the trends that they're seeing are tacos, always a favorite, scrambled eggs, artisanal candy. These photos, if you're looking at the video, are just breathtakingly good food photography. Food photography is a specialty that professional photographers, you know, spend their whole careers mastering, and they have such great pictures of food. Sour flavors are another trend. Savory pancakes. Now, if you've got a website or a publication, or you have ads, or you're going to build a video or a viral video, Shutterstock.com is the place to get that content. They have more than 46 million, that's million with an M, high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And obviously, many of them are taken by professional photographers and artists. They have flexible pricing, and you could download 25 images a day with a standard subscription package. That's the one we use at Twit. It's just way more than we could ever use, and it's just quite a luxury to be able to get that many photos every single day. And they have really, really great sophisticated search and shareable light boxes. No credit card needed. Just start an account and begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be. And once you decide to buy, use the offer code TNT115. New accounts will receive 20% off image subscription packages. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 20% off on new accounts, use the offer code TNT115. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. And we thank them for their amazing photographs of savory pancakes. Well, rapper, producer, and entrepreneur Sean Carter. Who the heck is Sean Carter? He's better known as Jay-Z and even better known as Beyonce's husband, is buying a Swedish streaming music company called Aspyro for $56 million. Aspyro has two small music services called Wimp and Tidal. And, you know, when I first saw this, Christina Warren, I thought, you know, this guy's nuts. But actually, the price is pretty good. And the thing that's interesting about both of these music services that are made by Aspiro is that they are the they're the kind of music service that's like super high quality, lossless content. So there seems to be a several companies and several organizations and several stars who are really into this kind of high quality music. What hasn't been demonstrated yet is if the market cares if their music is high quality or if they're just ready to have the same old Drek MP3 type garbage.
No, it's interesting, right? Because we have, you know, services like Deezer is probably the best known that does high quality streaming. And then obviously there's, you know, the Pono Player from Neil Young, and there's, you know, HD Tracks, and there's a number of other services that are really pushing the idea of high fidelity audio. And I think in a streaming context, especially as people are investing more and more in their headphones, the idea that we can hear a difference between you know, high quality, high fidelity streams and lower fidelity streams, whether that's true or not, I think is appealing to a lot of people. And there's, what was interesting to me actually was looking at this data was the fact that WIMP has over 500,000 paying subscribers, which the fact that they're only in a few European countries actually makes that fairly compelling. You know, the fact that they have 500,000 paying users who are willing to pay for the service and they're really not, they don't, hasn't had rapid international expansion yet, is encouraging.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's actually a surprisingly successful company. I hadn't heard of them before. And Jay-Z is actually offering them quite a good price. It's 59% premium over the stock's closing price on Thursday. And you had mentioned that WIMP has half a million paying users. Tidal, the other service, sells subscriptions at $20 a month. That's double the price that Spotify charges. And Tidal, of course, is in the United States and in Britain. They arrived in September, so that's a brand new service. I don't know. This is an interesting play. He seems to be a busy guy, so it'll be interesting to see if he's got the time to run a company like this. But it sure was unexpected, and you know, frankly, I think it's a little crazy to get into the streaming music racket. But who knows? I mean, they've already got paying customers, so why the heck not?
Right. Well, I mean, and frankly, I mean, he's shown himself to be a really smart businessman at having a diverse number of investments. And I think that, you know, we saw Apple with Beats, and there are a number of other companies out there, too, that are just really interesting in this space. So I think that it's just, I think, probably as much of a factor as him wanting to diversify his investment strategy and pick up on things that he personally finds interesting. So we'll have to see what happens.
Well, coming up, we're going to hear a call for Uber to put a camera in every single Uber car. We'll see if that works. But first, let's talk about Prosper. What the heck is Prosper? Prosper is the company that started the concept of peer-to-peer lending way back in 2006. They are a pioneer in this industry. And according to TechCrunch, they are leading the disruption of the financial services industry, this type of lending, with both Prosper and their copycat companies. You can visit prosper.com/twit and get a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. That's up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. You can do whatever you want with that money, pay off your high rate credit cards, whatever you need to do. And you can check your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit score. Just go to prosper.com/twit. You got to remember the slash twit part. For a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit fans a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Just go to prosper.com/twit, and that's a special site for the Twit Army. Up to $35,000 in just 5 days and a $50 Visa prepaid card. Go to prosper.com/twit. And thank you so much for supporting Tech News Today. Well, the woman who said she was raped in December by an Uber driver in New Delhi, India, filed a lawsuit against Uber in U.S. federal court yesterday. In addition to seeking unspecified damages, the woman is calling for Uber to establish 24-hour customer support centers and install video cameras in Uber cars. Interestingly, her attorney is Douglas Wigder, who famously represented a hotel maid who accused former International Monetary Fund chief Dominique Strauss-Kahn of sexual assault. We've got a product obituary for you. AOL's reorg is claiming another victim. The company is killing off the unofficial Apple weblog, which is better known by its acronym TUA. As we reported earlier in the week, AOL is shutting down its gaming blog, Joystick. Do you think this is a wise move, Christina Warren? I mean, these seemed like some pretty good blogs.
Well, like I said, you know, I can't pretend to be an uninterested party in this. I should disclose that I got my start in tech writing for TUAW in 2007, and I worked there for 2 years. And it's really sad, I think. I mean, they're saying that the numbers just weren't performing, but it's a shame because both gaming and obviously Apple coverage in general are areas of extreme interest. And I feel sad to kind of look back over the last 10 years of the blogosphere and seeing some of the early sites go away. It's sad, and it brings a tear to my eye. I certainly wish the best for everybody who was part of those sites and hope that they're all able to go on to better things. I don't know from AOL's perspective if how much it makes sense or doesn't. I'm assuming that they've looked at the figures and said this does or doesn't make sense for us. But it feels a little bit like the end of an era because both of these sites were really instrumental in kind of the early days of tech blogging.
Yeah. And, I can't imagine what facts AOL might be working with that would justify a decision like this. I mean, as you know, Christina Warren, it is super easy to maintain a blog. You get some brilliant, yep, passionate writer and you put them in running the blog. And it's what's really difficult about a blog is getting mindshare, getting people to know your brand. And they've done that with these two blogs. People know who these blogs are. Their brands themselves are super valuable. And yeah, maybe they can't staff them with all the staff they've been paying for. Maybe, there are costs associated with these blogs. But ultimately, you can always reduce the cost behind a blog down to something that's manageable. And especially with brands like this, they're throwing away something of value. And I just think it's got to be a huge mistake. But that's just me. Well, in government crackdown news, Britain's Information Commissioner's Office forced Google to change its unified privacy policy by June 30th to make it less vague. This is the privacy policy that Google put into effect when they unified all their different sites and made it basically gave themselves permission to harvest content from, harvest user data from one site and use it for advertising on another site. And this was associated with Google Plus and getting Google Plus to be sort of the sort of central hub of everything that Google did. So they're going to be changing that by June 30th. We'll see how they do that. And Christina Warren, I'm not clear on whether or not this is going to be for the UK only or worldwide, but I have the feeling it's going to be worldwide because others have complained as well.
They have. And it'll be interesting to run kind of the diff statement on these policies once they're released to see exactly what's been changed. But yeah, I have a feeling, just like you, that it'll probably be worldwide because the UK might be the most vocal about it, but certainly other, the European Union has also expressed extreme, displeasure with some of Google's policies. So I see this expanding elsewhere.
We learned in October that Google was doing research to develop magnetic nanoparticles that would detect cancer cells in the bloodstream. The particles would be controlled using light signals sent from a wristband through the skin on the inside of the wrist. So to test this idea, Google scientists are building fake arms that have synthetic skin that have the same autofluorescence and biochemical components of actual arms. Not bad for a search engine company. Christina Warren, this is like they keep going down these research rabbit holes and they spend a lot of money on it, as we learned yesterday in their earnings report. Do you think this is what Google ought to be doing, curing cancer?
I mean, I think it's a great thing if they're able to cure cancer. I think, if I were an investor and I'm not, I would be concerned with, okay, now how are we able to fund all this? But I think it's great that they're doing these sorts of things. And if they can make the world a better place, I'm all for it. And if they can create these, these synthetic, these fake arms, that's awesome too. I mean, it's kind of weird and creepy, but it's also awesome.
Yes, it is. And they're still highly profitable. So it's all good, I guess. Secret co-founder Chris Bader is leaving the company. He says he's quitting because the company doesn't need him anymore. In a blog post, Bader said, quote, "It's becoming clear that the next chapter of Secret is beginning in a way that will be less about the kind of creation and design that I love. And so it's time for me to step down and let the team do what they do best," unquote. In other words, to violate the privacy of users. Do you think this is a bitter, passive aggressive note, or is he on the level here?
I don't know. I think there's probably a little bit of passive aggression there, but I also feel like Secret, it's such an interesting story. I mean, basically the rise and fall of this app, it was so hot, and then Whisper kind of the same way, but even more so with Secret. We were all kind of obsessed with it. And then they were like, okay, this can be used for bullying. And we were like, well, yeah, it can be, but that's sort of what makes it fun. And then they changed the app into becoming a Yik Yak clone, which if you're over the age of 20, you're like, I don't care. Yeah. So it's been sort of an interesting, rise and fall of interest within Secret. And I think that he's probably being on the level in one regard, and I think on the other level is probably like, I don't really like what's happening anymore, and I'd like to leave.
At least he didn't say he wanted to spend more time with his family.
That's true. I mean, of all the cliches you can do, at least he didn't say that. Yeah, so yeah. I guess he wants to spend more time with his
himself.
Right, exactly. In secret.
Well, we've got some big numbers for you. 1 billion. That's how many cast sessions Chromecast has facilitated, according to Google. Given previous reports by Google on the total collective number of cast sessions, the usage of Chromecast is rapidly accelerating, and that is not a surprise to me. So we got another big number for you, the same number, 1 billion. That's how many Android smartphones shipped last year out of the total 1.3 billion of all smartphones. Apple shipped 192.7 million iPhones, and Microsoft shipped 38.8 million Windows phones. Wow. That's a lot of Android phones.
I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised that the iPhone, you know, has 20% of the share, you know, but it's still when 20% of, I mean, you know, 200 million or close to 200 million versus a billion. There's no comparison. It truly is an Android world after all.
It certainly is. Although a huge number of those are in the third world. They're by yes. people who don't have access to the Play Store. They have a forked version of one kind or another. And so it's not exactly a super, it's that, you know, Google doesn't get to claim credit for all of that.
No, they don't. I mean, but that's sort of the interesting thing with an open operating system, right? I mean, that's kind of the great thing about Android. And to a certain extent, Google likes that. And to a certain extent, they don't. But the fact that a billion devices, Android devices were sold. And I mean, that's just smartphones. I don't know if that includes any other Android devices too, because Android's in everything these days. You know, it's in cars, it's in computers, it's in, you know, streaming devices, as we see with, you know, set-top boxes. It's pretty soon we're going to see it in microwaves.
Yeah.
So I guarantee it. There's going to be mark my words, an Android-powered microwave that you can control with your phone. So yeah, it's great stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Well, in news you can lose, someone recorded this week the testing of a new and camouflaged Tesla at the Alameda Airport test track. The car could be either a Model X SUV Tesla, which Tesla has been working on for several years, or a Model 3 that's expected to bring the cost of owning a Tesla down to $35,000, or both. We don't know what this thing is, but it looks fast. Look at that. It's a little insane mode there. It's kind of camouflage. It looks kind of like a Prius, actually. But there it is. And, of course, Alameda is in the San Francisco Bay Area. What, is that the Google barge in the background? No, that's just a regular barge. Well, there is. All right, well, in other news you can lose, the Federal Aviation Administration this week warned drone owners to not fly their drones anywhere near the Super Bowl this Sunday. The FAA said there's a ban on drones inside a 30-mile radius around the University of Phoenix Stadium where the Super Bowl is taking place. And just to make sure everybody gets the message, the FAA put out this No Drone Zone video on YouTube. Let's check it out.
Going to the big game? Have fun. Cheer on your team.
Holy, is that the Hulk?
And keep it
another
a no
Hulk.
Drone zone. Don't spoil the game. Leave your drone at home.
So, in other words, drones have become so mainstream that the FAA has to tell people, has to come up with slogans. Leave your drone at home.
Leave your drone at home. Don't bring your drone to... That's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I guarantee you there will be a drone at the game. It's got
to
be.
Oh, yes. There's going to have to be. I mean, at this point, I think they're just teasing people. I mean, they're basically like just saying, you've got to bring your drone to the big game.
Yeah, exactly. Especially now that they have those tiny ones that you can fit in your pocket or whatever.
Oh, exactly. Man, I mean, can you imagine like being like in the beer line and just pulling out your tiny drone and being like, look.
Yeah. Yet another reason to watch the Super Bowl. Well, our TNT fan of the day is the TriCaster, who posted this picture on Twitter. Let's take a look at that picture from the TriCaster. Caster's a super fan out there, posting all kinds of pictures from the Twit. What's it called? The Inside Twit accounts. And there it is. There we are. How do you watch? Go ahead, Christine.
I have to comment on this photo because the TriCaster has a Hewlett-Packard tablet. I think it's the one person in the entire world who has a Hewlett-Packard tablet. So that's awesome.
Yeah, hang on to that. That's a collector's item.
Seriously, it is a collector's item.
Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. And that is the tech news today. Christina Warren, you're going to watch the Super Bowl. Are you a big football fan?
I'm not a big football fan, but with all the Deflategate stuff, I think I have to tune in. And plus, I love the ads. Now, there's going to be a big kind of, you know, for the halftime show, there's going to be the Puppy Bowl, the YouTubers Bowl, and of course, the regular halftime show with Katy Perry. So I'll probably be watching the Puppy Bowl myself.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to definitely be tuning in for the big game. Got to.
Yeah, me too. What are you going to do? Yeah, I'm going to do it. To me, it's a foodie event. It's an advertising event. And, you know, it's my one time a year to watch a sport.
Exactly.
So I figure it's got to be something. It might as well be the Super Bowl. You know, it's violent enough and crazy enough to capture my attention. So I don't think I could watch baseball. I just
no. And sometimes, just sometimes, Janet Jackson whips out her boobs. So there's always something that can happen on live TV at the Super Bowl, which is part of what makes it fun. Or the lights go out, or something crazy happens.
Yeah.
So
they should bring her back. I think that
they really should
give her another shot. You know,
it's been 11 years. You know, put it all aside and show us once and for all how to really do it without inciting the FCC.
And now, after all the television, we're kind of used to it now. So it's like
we are at this point, as if we wouldn't even get that many complaints. People were like, whatever, Game of Thrones. What are you talking about?
Right. I get Game of Thrones. We get to see them both. I mean, come on.
It's exactly. Like, precisely.
What are you doing? All right, Christina Warren. Well, thank you so much. We will see you when you co-anchor next week.
Yes. Yeah, see you guys next week.
All right. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today via RSS, or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv, or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. If you're ever in the greater Petaluma region, come on in and watch us live. We love to have a live audience. And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Mike Elgan. That's MikeElgan. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name's Mike Elgan. Enjoy the Super Bowl this weekend, and we will see you Monday.